Yeah. So the first thing to do if you want to pursue this is really get hold of a copy of the Mabinogion that you like. But the exploration of it depends on really doing what we've been doing here, to really take the ideas and the images in particular into this practice of going into Anuvan, which in a way is just taking the image, going down inside yourself, touching ground, and following the process that then happens. If you've made a link to Arawn and to the Hound of Anuvan, what you will find is when you do this, that the hound will come, will reappear. And obviously one of the forms that we've worked with a lot is this image of the mound in the center of the forest. This is the Mound Arabeth. It's one of the center archetypal images of it, that the four branches of revolve around. So a very good thing to do if you want to continue with this is to follow the hound to the Mound Arabeth, let it lead you into the mound and explore the mound for yourself. The four doors that can be found in the mound lead you into the four branches. They lead you into the four directions and therefore into the four branches. So you can explore this within yourself. And the other thing you can do is to take ideas from or images from the stories and to let them travel down with you, and to take those to the mound or take them to the dog, or take them to Arawn or to Rhiannon or any other inner figure that you find in your inner landscape, and ask for help in order to work with them. The genuinely difficult thing about continuing to work with this is to keep it going. So the key thing to do if you are interested in doing that is to do it regularly, but for not very long. So don't try and I'm going to explore this for an hour. Try for 10 minutes, 15 minutes tops, to integrate it. You know, we can do much longer things here because we've got this great pool of attention and we've set aside time and space. The more important thing to do is, in terms of when we're back in our ordinary lives, is to, if we want to continue to explore these things, is to do something regularly each day, if we can, or every other day or something, but regularly enough so that it becomes a habit. What you will find is the whole thing gradually starts to come to life. You know, we're really in the position of Rhonabwy when he comes to the Black House, the ruined Black House with a fire that's just about hanging on, and there's a lot of crap in it that needs kind of clearing out, and instead of a bull hide, we've got a calf's hide. So we're making the best that we can of materials that are, if you like, in disrepair. So we work with it little, in the same way that you wouldn't attempt to renovate a house. I'm conscious you do a renovating house. You know all about how long it takes to renovate a house. In the same way that you wouldn't try and rush and renovate a house with that and expect it to work and try and do it all at once. You do little by little. You clean out your own stables, you breathe life into the fire. And you do that by just these kind of small exercises of just moving into the inner, listening to what you find there, but trying to trust what you find is kind of one of the key things. And therefore that does mean working with doubt and distrust, which of course will arise at the same time. Now, obviously we've dealt, you know, within 2 days, haven't been able to deal with the whole span of the tradition, really. If you're interested in reading other things, this is a very lovely book. It's a bit expensive, it's £25, but if you're interested in the poem Prithai Anuvan, which I've used, this book, my friends Caitlin and John Matthews, King Arthur's Raid on the Underworld, is very good. It's a great study of the poem, and it's got great artwork, which helps you get into the imagery of the poem. The key thing, though, is not to take on too much, actually. I mean, my honest opinion, I suppose, is that if you're going to get into this, just play around with the Mabinogion first. If you get into it more seriously, there are things like the triads of Britain that you can study, which is an extraordinary thing, translation by Rachel Bromwich, which are these are the mnemonics that the bards used to remember the many, many stories that they used to hold. And if you're looking at the triads, really gives us an understanding of how much has been lost, because there are so many lost stories. But the interesting thing about the triads is the triads are succinct images. They're like seed images. So if you contemplate a triad, it sort of comes to life inside you. It's like a pop-up box. It sort of starts to pop up and tell itself to you. Because the point in the end is not the, you know, we're not trying to cognitively learn a set of stories. And in a way, what I'm doing with this is different from when we think about story. You know, storytelling these days has become a performance art. And it's lovely, in a way, it's a lovely performance art, but that's not what we're doing here. We're looking at the stories as vehicles for contacting important life, death energies inside ourselves. And in a way, you're touching it, and you're, the whole principle behind this is we're talking into something that talks back. And that has its own independent reality. It's not just psychology, it's not just stuff inside yourself. These are, underneath these traditions are real presences that you can come into relationship with little by little. The other, as well as the descent into Andevin, the other key exercise is this exercise of standing as a tree. It's an exercise used by a lot of different spiritual traditions because trees are universal. But the sense of just standing as a tree, noticing the space around you, and combining, if you like, that physical experience of standing with the imaginative experience of rooting down into the earth and opening up into the sky and finding a sense of center between beneath and above, and then the sensing of the direction, sensing the space around you, is a really powerful, very simple, but very kind of powerful exercise. As is sounding the awen, you know, that sense of your voice sounding out into space. So these are sort of simple things in a way. So it doesn't have to be, pursuing this doesn't have to be and shouldn't be complicated, because if it's complicated, you will drop it. Okay, so, but it's a sort of organic process. It'll come to life within you if you engage with it.
Now, are there any rules?
Any rule? What do you mean by rules?
I was thinking about etiquette, perhaps. You know, if there's a kind of, you know, if you're kind of going into the mound and you're meeting, you know, certain figures. I would imagine that there's a kind of a particular etiquette as well.
Well, the etiquette would be the same etiquette when you meet anybody, right? You know, be polite, be communicate clearly. The key thing is to not agree to things that you don't want to be bound to, right? Because that's a treat. Because this whole idea of treat, you know, giving your words a serious thing, and press the pause button as often as you want to, so the other world beings will be fine with that. You know, that there's a sort of it is the same etiquette, I think, as if you're meeting people for the first time. You won't go far wrong if you just behave towards the inner world beings like you would towards outer world beings, and get to know them. But one of the key things is to maintain your own sense of sovereignty. You know, principle underneath these stories is one of dialogue and exchange. So that place where, in the beginning, where Poich does not submerge himself in the otherworldly experience, holds himself back in his own place of sovereignty. So that's a really important principle in a way. So that but other than that, just go slowly into it. Get to know the landscape. Get to know the beings. Don't psychologize them. They're not just part of your own psychology. And we have no less an authority than Carl Gustav Jung, who would say, my great hero is not Celtic, but great human heroes is Jung. Because what he does right at the beginning of the late 19th, early 20th century is to really bring back the idea of the living inner world. And, you know, Jung would you know, in some ways some of the post-Jungian work has almost subverted some of his original intentions. But you find Jung talking to beings like Philemon, who was a wise man with the wings of a kingfisher, and he says that his conversations with Philemon created his whole psychological tradition. So and if you read his Red Book in particular, which is his account of his own imaginative journeys, you know, he's communing with beings, listening to them, being guided with them, just as he would if he was talking to colleagues in the outer world. So there's something about, I suppose, in terms of etiquette, is take it seriously, behave towards the beings as you would towards outer beings, maintain your own sense of sovereignty, and go slowly with it. Take your time. Not, to be honest. Alan Lee did an illustrated version of Lady Charlotte Guest's translation of the Mabinogion with some nice images in. But I can't actually think of very many. I tell you who I think incorporated wonderfully, the sculptor John Myvian Morris, John Myvian Morris does do sculptures based on the Mabinogion. What the hell is his book called? I think it's called The Celtic Vision. It's a wonderful book about his, it's not actually directly the Mabinogion, but he's looking at Celtic art and he incorporates in there the real principles that we've been looking at. And there isn't a book in English on on John Myvian Morris. There's a good, do not be fooled by John Myvian Morris artist if you see it online. It's artist, but it's all in Welsh. And if your Welsh is up to it, it's brilliant. It's got wonderful pictures of his work in it. But other than that, the main book that he has in English is Celtic Vision. But certainly if you look up John Myvian Morris on the web, you get these extraordinary kind of images and he really understands the surreal nature of the Mabinogion. Because what I hope has come over a bit here in this, although we haven't been very long together, is that this is a seriously surreal book based on paradox and mystery and on turning things upside down. You know, there's only touched a few of the stories really. There's lots more in the book, you know, but in a way, you know, as you engage with it and as you get past the sort of the quaintness of the language, as you just engage with it, it's very, very powerful. There's been a whole series of books, modern adaptations of the was it Gomer Press? There's been a whole series of books written by Karen Welsh writers, writings. So the writings of the stories of the Mabinogion as modern novels. I personally haven't loved them. I thought I'd really like them, but they often don't have the surrealism and the depth for me of the. They're written, you know, socially they're kind of interesting, but they don't touch the particular dimension that we've been looking at this weekend. You know, for example, one of them's called The Dreams of Max and Ronnie, and it's about there's a poem called The Dream of Max, there's a story called The Dream of Max and Ledig, Max and the Emperor. And it's okay, but it's almost too conscious works. The one writer, there's an extraordinary writer that I'm going to read you a bit of from one of his essays before we finish, that I think incorporates the spirit of the Mabinogion more than any other. It's the children's writer Alan Garner, who owns the Mabinogion as the prime inspiration of his life. He wrote a trilogy, two which are children's books, and one is which is an adult book. The Weird Stone of Brisingamen and the Moon of Gomrath, which are the two earliest books, and they're very childlike. They're partly sort of influenced by Lord of the Rings, I think. But there are very powerful elements from the Mabinogi in them. And then, oh God, what's this last one called? Not Strandlow, but Strandlow was brilliant. Boneland. Now he wrote Boneland, which is the third of that trilogy, and everybody's been disappointed by it because all the ones who loved the Tolkien-esque aspects of his two early books thought this was going to be a similar thing, but actually what he did, he's done something very interesting, and he took the male child character in the two previous books, and now presents him to us as a 50-year-old man, and looking at his in a way this character sort of represents himself, I think, where he's addressing the Mabinogi based themes that he found in the earlier two books in a much more adult kind of concept. So the third book, Boneland, is very ambiguous. You're not sure if the central character is mad or inspired, and you're not sure whether the earlier childhood adventures were something real that happened or some crazed fantasy of his. And it's very powerful. It really holds some of the essence of that book, really.
Owl Service
was another book. You're based on the fourth branch. Yeah. So there's also good. There's a rather nice DVD set called The Owl Service, which is all about, and it's also is all about Blood Eyewith and as owl or flowers. So it's again slightly disturbing, slightly powerful kind of film, right? The other writer, American writer, who draws again a children's writer who draws on Mabinogi themes is Susan Cooper. She wrote a series called The Dark is Rising Quintet, which is. Really looks at the mythic traditions of Britain, and as part of that draws a lot on the Mabinogi. And the key thing is to read the Mabinogi, but some of these other people's takes on them, particularly Garner's, can be just useful because they give you other people's views, other people's insights into the process. Alan Garner, I think, is one of the great hidden treasures of British writing. He is a genius around these mythic themes. The book that you mentioned, Strandloop, is a story about somebody who it's a true story, about an 18th century labourer who was transported to Australia in the 18th century and escaped from the penal colony and found himself adopted into an Aboriginal tribe and became a shaman, and who finds his way back to his original village. And there's a phenomenal end sequence in Strandloper where he's in his, because the book begins with a sort of Cheshire folk ritual calling out the green man from the kind of depths of the church. And he comes back to the church, and it's like he brings the dream world of Australia into the dream world of England in this final kind of sort of sequence. Is very extraordinary, it's almost hallucinogenic. So anything that he writes about this stuff is really connected to the heart of the matter in a way. The other thing you can explore if you kind of want to follow these things is to really look at this business of the Hound of Annwn, to look at the relationship with Arawn, and just see how that travels for you. In particular, be interested in the Hound. So if the Hound has come to you, then treat it like a dog. It's a silly thing, isn't it? But I mean, it's kind of almost literally make friends with it. A strange dog comes to live with you. Pay attention to the dog, see what you can learn from the dog, work out how to live with it.
Celtic New Year coming up soon, and I never come across that at all, that it was that time of year.
Yeah.
Can't remember. There's a particular name which I can't remember. Well, that's the Irish name for it. There's a Welsh name for it which I can't write. I can never remember.
I do know it.
I do know it as well, but it's on, I can't find it. So it's.
Is it?
It might be. Kalangai. It is Kalangai, yes. Well done. Thank you, Eleanor. Excellent. That's right.
So it's the heart of the winter.
Heart of the winter. That's right. Heart, that's right. Well, one tradition, I'm not sure how widespread it was, and I've always wanted to try it out, but I think it would be cruel to pigs, I think, is that you chase a black pig through your house. Because you're chasing, because the pig, and let the pig overturn everything. Because it's something about, there's something about letting in the energies of winter and kind of, and letting it go through the front, the back to the front of the house and out again. I've never known it's done in my lifetime, but I always thought it'd be fun to try it. But it might be a bit hard on the pig, yes, I know. It's sort of.
It might be hard on your house as well.
Well, I expect it would as well, actually, yes, indeed. I think that's kind of the idea. But yeah. But it's an interesting idea, because it is that takes that sow or the hoch image, the underworld image, the underworld animal that comes in and turns everything upside down. A pack of dogs. Well, you have a pack of dogs, so you could try that. Yeah. So chase Jaffa and Betsy round and round the house. Okay. Tell Phil from me, it's an old Welsh custom. Things are meant to be broken and turned upside down, that's right.
It's always that thing that was sweeping through the house as well.
Yeah, same.